We're all gonna die.
I hope so.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Here's the deal. We fail the mission, you die.
If we find out any information you give us is false, you die.
If we find out you have personalized license plates, you die.
What? No.
If you cough without covering your mouth.
Harley, although that isn't an open invitation for you to cough without covering your mouth.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. In fact, Sonny just cut us a nice check for the Subbeacon store, and I spent mine on a salad.
What was the total? It was like $13
yes.
for 2 months.
So I didn't get the fancy one. I didn't get extra protein. I just got like the simple cob. Right. That's the Sunny Bunch special at Chopped, isn't it?
The cob.
That was what you used to get.
I loved all the salads there.
I was
a connoisseur. Depending on the mood I was in. I really liked they used to have a very good steak salad. It was very basic.
Yeah.
It was just steak.
Menu is
and
radically
fried onions
different.
And tomatoes with the creamy blue cheese. But
oh
then
my,
they
it sounds so healthy.
But then yeah, right. And then they stopped carrying the steak. I think
the steak
was too expensive.
They did. So. They still have shrimp, but I think it's questionable. It's a very small menu. They've really consolidated so they can just have, you know, a few ingredients ready to go. That's a JVL. Were you ever a Chopped fan?
Chopped was was really good for me because there was one salad there that I liked.
Which was?
It was the Tex-Mex Caesar, maybe.
Oh. Well, there was a Mexican Caesar.
Yeah, there
Mexican
was a Tex-Mex
Caesar.
Yeah,
with the cotija cheese and the.
All I know is that all you need to know is though that I went to Chopped probably twice a day for 7 years. I'm sorry, twice a week for 7 years, and I only ever ordered that one salad
you didn't want to venture out.
Well, because you know my view is when you find a single dish that you really like, you should never order anything else other than that from that place because anything else is going to disappoint you. And once. Literally once I ordered a different salad because I like the whole way over I was working myself up to like gotta try something different gotta try Jay you can't I can't live like this you gotta, and so I just picked something else it was terrible absolutely terrible just thought I was like yeah you idiot
I hope
didn't like that you just stuck with what you like.
Wasted $20.
Yes, 20. I hope you're not thinking of the crispy chicken ranch because that is an amazing salad.
Well, yes, shockingly the 1500 calorie salad was
crispy,
the best.
The crispy
salad.
There's a reason why it's crispy.
Yeah. So it was, and after that, it was another decade before I tried something different.
Ever.
Because it just taught me all the wrong lessons.
Question.
Yes.
JBL, what cereal do you eat?
I don't eat cereal.
You don't eat any cereal? I'm trying to think of like what a regular item would be that we could figure out something else for you to eat. Like what kind
of... I just mean when you go out. Like when you go out to a restaurant, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You maybe you don't hit upon the perfect thing the first time, but once you find something at a place that you really like... Mm-hmm. Why would you order anything else?
Because you never know. There might be something even better. A restaurant might have more than one good thing.
Look, I'm very sympathetic to JBL on this point. I'm very, very sympathetic. When I go to a restaurant and I have a go-to dish that I like, I am very hesitant to get off of it and get something else.
It depends on a couple things. It depends on what you're in the mood for and also the cost. If it's at a high-end restaurant, the stakes are so high, so to speak, that you do become very cautious about venturing away from what you know is going to be really
good. The place where I get adventurous at a fancy restaurant is with the appetizers.
Oh, sure.
I'll mess around with the appetizers because that's a lower stakes thing. It's like, all right, I'm going to get like the deviled eggs brulee or some shit.
Really?
And
ooh,
then
that
like,
sounds so
you
good.
Know, I don't know.
Ooh, wow.
I'm just like, I'm
they
just
take a little torch to that.
Combining
they burn,
words.
They burn the egg.
It's crust of sugar on my eggs. My
strategy is I start with the main and I work my way backwards because what will pair with it is what my thing is.
Well, you know, our friend Megan McArdle has a rule of thumb that was taught to her by, I think, an econ professor when she was in her MBA program, which was that whenever you go to Chinese restaurants, you should always order a third entree that neither you nor your dinner partner has ever tasted before.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Because Chinese entrees are cheap enough that adding a third entree is nothing. You know, what is it, $10,
no, it's
$13, right?
I get excited.
And this way, you maybe you'll hate it, but maybe it'll be a new favorite dish for one of you.
That's right.
At which point, you've discovered something new, but your risk is, and you know what? I would do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would do that.
Good.
But I wasn't going to go to Chopped and order two salads because I would have to take out a mortgage.
Yes, that's true. I'll tell you what. I was at Chopped and I was going to get the Cobb. And then you know what? It was like later. It was normally I go for an early lunch, but it was like later and I looked and it was like the dregs of the avocado. You know, that's starting to turn
brown.
And I immediately stopped. I said, stop. I'll take the crispy chicken ranch. So that's what happened. JVL, what's going on?
I want to talk about this tweet I sent the two of you guys.
Oh, yes. Oh, do you want to talk about it now or you want to circle back to
it? Boy, I mean, I don't have anything going on in my personal life, and so I just thought we could talk about this. But so maybe we want to talk about your lives, you could tell me what you boys are up to.
Yes, and then I'm going to go back to you.
Wait, is this the fighting
versus,
the animals thing?
Man versus animal. Absolutely.
I sent that tweet to you two. JVL's taking credit for my... Stop stealing my bit! He's stealing my bit!
Remember that movie tweet I sent you guys? Oh, no, that's not me. Okay, Sonny, what's going on?
No, JVL, go ahead.
I want to... If that's what JVL wants to
talk
about...
I have other things to talk about.
I want to save JVL the best for last, so to speak.
JVL, explain the tweet.
I thought Vic just said he wanted to move on.
I did. I want to save the
best for
last.
Respect what the host is trying to do here, Sonny.
Yeah, because I got a transition.
You have other things you wanted to talk about.
It's all connected. There are reasons. Sonny, there are reasons for this. JVL, hold the thought. Sonny, go.
I can't wait to step all over your next transition. It's going to be awesome.
I hate you.
It's going to be great.
Go ahead.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm very big news. Very big news in the world of movies
and
home video collecting. The Criterion Collection announced their 4K debuts. They're stepping up. They're going into the world of 4K. And the big headline, of course, is that they're releasing 6 UHD 4K Blu-ray discs in November, just in time for Christmas. Just in time for Christmas shopping, everyone. But the 6 films are, of course, Citizen Kane. Citizen Kane is getting the 4K treatment. And also The Piano, Mulholland Drive, The Red Shoes, A Hard Day's Night, and Menace to Society.
Okay.
We should do a very special episode on
Mulholland Drive.
I think that's a quadrant. That's
special.
A tricky quadrant one. It's very long. And it doesn't make any sense, but it really does very well.
We could do Mulholland Drive, Bound, and Basic Instinct. It'd be really good. A triple feature.
Well, that should be a bonus episode. We should just do
those. You want to up the subscribers? That'll do it. So, what are you most excited about from that collection?
So here's the thing. It's weird.
First, before you do that, do you yet own a 4K Blu-ray player?
Yeah, I have a PS5. PlayStation 5.
Oh, you got a PS5.
Yeah,
you're in the lead. How is it?
I bought a PS5.
Is it amazing?
It's fine. It's totally fine. The thing is, I'm not a gamer. I'm not a gamer.
Really?
So like,
really?
I bought it, and there were three games. There were two games that I wanted to play, and I've played both of them. So now I'm just waiting for the next game that I want to play. I don't know. It'll probably come out in like 3 years. I don't know. But I'm not a gamer. So like the only games I really play are the Resident Evil games. And the new Resident Evil game is very, very, looks very, very good on it.
I take it there's a whole series.
Yeah, this is Resident Evil 8, I think.
Does Mila Jovovich does she do voiceover work?
No, that's very different.
It's really, that's different.
How dare you insult?
So, Sonny, why did you get the PlayStation then, which I assume was 4 times the cost of a
regular
4K
Blu-ray player?
It was about twice as expensive as like a 4K player that I would have wanted to get. But I got it because I do like playing video games. I just like playing the occasional video game.
Okay.
I play like a game a year. So it's like I'm not a gamer. It doesn't really matter that much to me, the gaming aspect of it. But I really wanted a 4K player, and I didn't want to buy a 4K player and a PS5, at some point in the you know near future. I just wanted to do it all at once.
Okay.
Don't judge me. Don't judge my
criterion
my spending.
Are you just getting them all?
So I'm gonna throw this out there. I have no real desire to upgrade my Citizen Kane Blu-ray to a 4K. The thing about the PlayStation 5 and my TV, the OLED, is that the whatever magical processors are within both of those two machines make all of my Blu-rays look exceptionally good on the 4K TV. Not quite like a 4K disc, but very, very close, and like much better than 4K streaming, or I'm sorry, much better than 1080p HD streaming looks. So when I stream something, I'm like, oh, this is HD. It's not 4K. It's not as good. But when I watch a Blu-ray on my Blu-ray player, it looks very, very good. So I don't feel a ton of need to upgrade that. I already also own Mulholland Drive, and I don't really like that movie as it is. So I'm definitely not gonna upgrade that one. But the one I am excited for is Menace to Society, by the Hughes brothers. Which is just the Hughes brothers are really, really great, and totally underappreciated. And I'm glad that they are getting some love here. Because I feel like in a critical world that is like desperate for black filmmakers to love and appreciate, the Hughes brothers, are really good, have made great, you know, kind of genre oriented movies, but also just really good movies. And don't get nearly enough love and praise. So I'm excited for Menace to Society. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I'm going to make a case that you should get Citizen Kane just to see what a remastered native 4K version of that looks like on the OLED.
Here's the problem. So there was a big thread on Twitter, I don't know, maybe a year or two ago, by a guy who was tasked with finding the original silver nitrate negative of Citizen Kane. It does not exist.
Meaning they can't find it?
So the punchline of this thread was they think it got sent to a silver reclamation plant. Basically.
Oh my gosh.
So all of the transfers that are made are not going to be native, you know, negative transfers. They're all based on essentially really good prints, which is good. It'll look really good. I have no doubt that it'll look like it'll look as good as it has ever looked before. I feel like I have a hard time justifying spending another $40 on Citizen Kane again after owning it on DVD and on Blu-ray.
I mean, we do this podcast that people pay us for, and you could probably spring for $40 for it.
I don't know. I'll wait till the Barnes & Noble 50% off sale.
You know what I would get?
I'll get it for $20.
You know what I would get? I would get Red Shoes. Dave Duchovny. Remember that series? That was a great series.
Oh, the Red Shoe Diaries.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's on Criterion Collection.
We should try and guess which of these movies Vic would be most interested in. Obviously, Mulholland Drive is number one.
Yeah.
But I assume A Hard Day's Night is probably number two.
Yeah, definitely. It's wacky. It's great. It's great. It's wacky. And, you know, there's so many ridiculous scenes in that, but it's great. And, I'm a fan.
We should definitely do a Mulholland Drive bonus episode. That would be fun. We could you had mentioned wanting to do a commentary, JVL. We could just have Vic talk over the Daily Motion scenes.
I was going to say, because I haven't actually seen the movie per se.
You should, it would be funny just to hear,
like, what is happening, you know? Okay. Well, that's exciting.
Actually, I would like to hear Vic's big boy review in which he recapitulates the plot.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, just explain the plot.
Just explain what happens in the movie.
I can't, because I cannot tell you what happens in that movie.
You can't. I'm just going to be making stuff up.
I can't.
Up.
I got
really
no.
Scary.
This is my most Philistinian opinion. But David Lynch does nothing for me. David Lynch does absolutely nothing for me. I don't like his movies. I find them weird for the sake of being weird. And even the ones that aren't like over the top weird, like Blue Velvet or something.
Oh, that's
still
a good
like
one too. Blue
me.
Velvet's a good movie. I find his whole affect off-putting.
I don't love him.
Okay.
And this puts me very much outside the mainstream of film criticism. But
that's what does it.
Well,
that's the thing that puts you outside the mainstream.
I would like to say that I have drugged the mainstream over to the Zack Snyder camp. This is my greatest achievement is making
normalizing
Zack Snyder
normalizing Zack
Snyder
window on it.
Okay. Sucker Punch is going to be in the next tranche of Criterion 4Ks. Okay. You just wait.
At which point you will explode.
That's it. Away. Wow. Easy now.
I know.
Victorino, how are you, buddy?
I'm fine. It's good to be back. As you know, I was doing...
It? Where were you? Were you Maine? Were you Cape May?
Connecticut and Jersey. So my father-in-law had his 80th birthday. And, of course, I wanted to spend time with my father as well and spend some quality time in New Jersey. He is doing well. I was able to, give him a break from cooking so I can do some cooking for him, which he enjoyed. And I let him clean the pool, though, still, because, it's good for your core. As you know, the skimmer. I said, don't overdo it. I don't want to find him in the pool. But, he does. He does laps and things like that. He does, sometimes he'll put on, the fins to, work on his leg muscles because his legs are getting so tiny. But, so he's doing laps, which is good. And that was nice. And he's doing well. And he tends to my mother's garden to make sure that all the plants and everything are still
good.
Doing well. But the traveling was exhausting up and down the 95 corridor, as you can imagine. There's almost never a good time to take the Cross Bronx Expressway. got in early enough, but going... Kate and I had a big debate because you're listening to like 1010 Winds and you're looking at your Google Maps and but when they give you the traffic report, they always talk about the outbound and the inbound.
Wait, you're listening to what?
Oh, that's 1010 Winds. Thank you, JVL. He nods. It's a radio.
don't bother explaining.
Okay,
just keep moving.
Right, all right. 1010 Winds, by the way, makes a little appearance in the movie Goodfellas. You'll hear the signature, music.
Is that when they announced the
Lufthansa heist? Yes, that's 10 Winds. But it's like when they talk about the bridges or the bridges, tunnels, outbound, inbound. And, if you're really sort of Jersey-centric, you're going to think that that's,
Which way is outbound,
right,
which is inbound.
Because you're going out of New Jersey. No, in fact, it's all from New York. And it's New York. That's the point is everyone assumes you're outbound or inbound from the city. But, you take a gamble. But on the way back, we were driving, and there was no good way out of Connecticut. The traffic is so horrendous. So then we decide we're going to, at some point, flip up and go take the tap, right? And we go up. And
did you take the Merit to get to the tap?
No, because the Merit is just as bad now, and it's like two lanes. But 95 is like two lanes in parts of Connecticut. It's ridiculous. And so the slowdowns, you hit slowdowns in New Haven, Bridgeport, Stamford. And then you go up.
Stamford is the
worst. And I had to go to the bathroom really bad. And I just kept on thinking, I'll make it. My plan was I'm going to make it to the Garden State Parkway and use the bathroom. Right. I know. I wasn't even in Stamford yet. And I'm like, no, I can hold it. And the worst part is you're coming around these corners and then you see the brake lights and psychologically it makes it even worse. You're like, that's it. I'm about to have an accident. And it got to the point where this is just to go pee. But it got to the point where I'm like, I'm probably going to get stones out of this, and it just hurt. It hurt the cough. Like even clearing my throat was like the pressure. And
you could just pull off and go to a.
I really thought
an Exxon station.
I thought here we
something.
Go. I'll find somewhere in Westport, or wherever. And then we made it to the tap, and then just a little bit past that, the throughway. That was the most perilous time. It reminded me of Quint's line in Jaws, like the scariest, the most scared he ever was right before. He gets rescued by the other boat, right? That's the most terrifying when you're that close. Amazingly, made it to Montvale. I ran, but even running makes it even worse, And And that was it. It was insane. In fact, I timed it. I timed there, it. It was a minute
there,
and a
there
half.
Is, it took there me is that.
To, yes, oh, it did.
Yes, there like a League of Their Own.
It was like, when, a, like Tom Hanks in League of Their Own.
When you unfold from the car,
yes.
After having held it right. in for so, in there a is there is position. A moment where you like want to double over just in like oh no my stomach
right and, this is, and you're like because everything is being held in place in a certain way with the seatbelt and your pants you know
it's
and
a then real you core come out exercise
and yeah I know and then you're walking like can I even make it there on time and I before I said I just left the whole family in the car I said you do what you want I gotta go. But that was it. That's my...
kids. Pump the gas. I gotta go.
that was it. And thank God for Montville. That's all I have to say. Now, that's all I have. JVL, you sent us this great tweet about animals versus
Sunny
man.
Sent it. Okay. So this is a YouGov poll of both Americans and Britons,
which is interesting. Like, why would you think of it asking those two groups? But anyway, go ahead.
Which of the following animals do you think you could beat in a fight if you were unarmed? Oh. And this is the most astonishing set of responses I have ever seen. For the first thing to notice is that the Brits have a much lower self-esteem than the Americans. In every single case,
I don't think they're exposed to animals as much as we are.
They are markedly more likely to say that they could not defeat the animal.
On every single animal, there's like a 5 to 15 point spread, basically.
In a couple of cases, it's like 20 points. Yeah. And so it begins with a very rat. Now, I am surprised that only 72% of Americans say that they could beat a rat in a fight if they were unarmed. House cat. 69% of Americans say they could beat it.
That's even more shocking because
here's,
much harder to kill a rat than a cat.
Before we run, here's how I would propose we do this.
Sure.
This segment,
okay,
where we run through the animals and say whether we think we could defeat them. Or,
sounds
but,
good.
But I want to make one poll question. Point and maybe we can get KSA to weigh in the comments here because I have a problem with the question here. Beat in a fight is a very nebulous term and it depends on the animal. So for instance, to say like beat in a fight could mean a couple of different things, right? It's like are you locked in a room? It's like you and a rat
saw
in a room,
yeah.
And you're just and whoever walks out of that room. Is the winner, whichever one of you survives, because that's different from like you're in a house and for instance the cat question, right? The cat decides to run, and you can't catch What if the cat gets behind the couch?
That's part of the fridge. That's part of the challenge.
I read this as kumite.
It depends on how we and we're gonna get to this and one of the ones later on is like elephant, right? So like a human beating an elephant in a fight
means what?
From my perspective, a human beating an elephant in a fight is surviving. Okay. It's like if you survive against the elephant, you've won.
No, I think it means defeating. I think it means physically defeating. I find it's insane. Okay.
So that's the first part of the question that's odd, Sonny. But the second part is, what does unarmed mean? So I assume unarmed means you don't have a gun
no
or
implements.
A samurai sword. However, does it mean when we do have opposable thumbs, we do have a cerebral cortex, does it mean that if we... if there is a stick on the ground or there's a rake or something,
you can use it?
Because we are tool users. That is part of our inborn advantage. Right.
Yes, I think you have to stick.
Or does that mean
with
you
the
can
rules.
Only use your
absolutely?
Your
you
hands.
Can only. Use, I think unarmed means unarmed across the board with no exceptions.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So, Sonny, how do you want to do this?
Why don't you work your way up, bottom to the top?
Do you have a
tornado
siren going off?
I think we start with the lamest of the animals.
I was
going to
say
rat. and move down to the strongest.
Well, you'd
of
be
the
surprised. I would go the other way because it's obvious that no one's going to beat an elephant. I don't understand this, but go ahead.
Then the percentages that's here fine. Are interesting. Okay. So it's okay. So yeah. Rat. Yes, we all.
Yes, I think we could all beat a rat.
No.
And let's just set as the parameters.
Kate
we're talking about.
Vic could yeah. not.
I. We're talking about locked in a room.
Yes.
We're just it's you
they're
versus
fast.
The animal locked in a room.
They're very.
I
fast.
Want to say you're in a pit. We're in a pit fight, and so if like the rat tries to run away, the people on the side like who are
you
betting on us,
a hold of that
shove
thing,
him back into the middle
gross.
With us.
Getting a hold of it is gross. I killed a mouse once with my pitching wedge. Because I had come home, I think I've told this story a few times. I came home from Dan Halpert's book party years ago. And thank goodness I was the only one in the house. And Kate had told me that she had set up a trap because she was sure there was a mouse. And I found it in the kitchen and it had only nicked it. And so when I went towards it, all of a sudden it moved. And then I immediately just ran and took a golf club. I did a casino to Joe Pesci thing to it, but I, you know, but I mean, that's it. But a rat, I don't know. Okay, questionable.
House cat, easy.
Yes, more right. So unpleasant, but yes.
Goose,
yes. I could wring its neck, Sonny. I'm the only one answering these questions.
I think the answer is. I mean, I think I could obviously take a cat. I don't see any. You just grab a cat and you snap
yeah.
it and you slam it against the
yeah.
wall or something. I mean,
unpleasant.
I don't really understand.
Same thing with a goose.
The goose, right. I think you grab its neck. It's,
geese. This
they're
is
tough.
The biggest.
Geese are
tough. This is the biggest gap, by the way,
yes.
in the Britons.
45.
And the
only 45% of Britons think that they could take a goose.
Maybe
yes.
they know something 61%. About geese that we don't.
What? Look, here's the thing. Geese are assholes. Geese
yeah,
are really
yeah, yeah.
mean.
Yeah. Swans
like if you go to a pond or something and you mess around near a goose, they will chase you and
yeah,
they will bite you
true.
And they
yeah.
will run you
but
down.
I do but remember
but that being said, there's.
Them. I
they're
mean,
just
yeah.
again. They're just like if they come at. They, first off, they all they have are beaks. It's not mm-hmm. like they've got like giant ripping
no,
teeth.
No, no, no.
Like
claws,
I mean, what are they?
Talons.
Maybe if the goose gets lucky, it gets an eye. But I'm gonna if it gets
it's
close
not
to me, enough
get
for me
your
to get
eye.
My eye,
you
I'm
know what it'll do? It'll,
go,
it'll bop you in the nuts. That's what if you look at where it's positioned. There was a video not long a couple years ago, I guess, of some tourist in Europe. It was terrible. And they remember they wanted to get a picture with the swan, and they killed the swan inadvertently trying to get a photo with the swan. So I think we can take on the goose.
Yeah, but swans are like swans are nice compared to geese. Swans are like pretty
swans
chill.
Are also, swans are also too. Mean. Medium-sized dog.
This is a tricky
easy.
One. It's a tricky one because I don't know what kind of dog it is. What,
medium-sized
like a 50,
Doberman.
A 50-pound pit bull
yeah.
is
yeah.
different from like a 50-pound golden
yeah,
retriever.
A Portuguese water dog.
Yeah. I think a mid-sized dog is easy. Now, here's where everything drops. Eagle. Because all of a sudden, like, Britons are down to like 18%, and
wow.
even the Americans are only 30% think that they could take an eagle.
Sonny.
Yeah, I don't know. Eagle. It depends. I guess it depends on if you're. Are you like you're starting and you're facing each other, in the Kumite, and you know the eagle is coming for you. I think I could take the eagle.
Yeah.
But if an eagle had the element of surprise,
yeah.
if you're just running along.
Yeah.
An eagle like swoops down.
Yeah, speed.
And starts scratching and pecking.
Yeah.
It can't,
you know what?
It can't
go
pick
for your
you
eyes.
Up and drop you out
no,
of the sky.
No, yeah, you're not a kitten. But I don't know. The sharp, it scratches you up.
I think I could take an eagle.
You could thrash
at the end
it,
of the day,
but you'd be bloodied. You would be bloodied.
It would be. An eagle would mess you
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. You got the beaks and the talons.
There's a great sequence in The Gunslinger, the Stephen King book, The Gunslinger, where the gunslinger like goes to his final like training battle, and he brings you're allowed to bring one weapon, and as his weapon he brings his eagle.
Oh.
And it's like, oh, that's great and clever and smart, because they're mean, they're fucking
yeah,
eagles.
We
man.
Could take
I would
an
say
eagle.
Related,
but we could I think we could take an eagle.
Related to eagle is like the vulture, and people should go to YouTube and type in Tales from the Crypt, Kyle MacLachlan, because that's one involving a vulture, and it's horrifying. Okay.
Large dog.
Boy, this is where if it's like a 150-pound like pile of muscle, Like,
no, they kill those, they kill humans.
Yeah, they kill humans.
You would have to do a lot of kicking. Maybe you gouge its eyes out. Like, you grab it by the
if
head.
If it gets you to the ground, if it gets you to the ground, you're fucked. If it gets you to the ground, you're fucked.
But again, you know, if we
it's
do
just
have opposable thumbs, and yes. if you...
Yes.
If you are allowed to pick up literally any object that is anywhere, you could throw dirt.
But it says unarmed. It says unarmed.
I know that, but I'm
you're
saying,
cheating. Yeah. You're
you
in
just
a pit.
Pick up yeah, a,
all of a
tree
sudden,
branch,
you got a lead
you're
pipe.
In a pit.
No,
can,
it doesn't work.
No,
that
just
way.
A tree branch. Like any,
oh,
any
look, I found this AK-47.
All right. So, but here is no, the moment where the entire poll goes insane. Because yeah. at large dog, you still have 13% of Britons and 23% of Americans saying, yeah, I could take him. Yep. The next animal on the list is a chimpanzee. And 17% of Americans say that they could take a chimpanzee, which is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard.
Chimpanzee will kill you.
They
in
obviously
a second.
Don't remember
rip
the
your arms
story
off.
About the woman in Connecticut. Remember that yeah. one?
Chew your face off.
What do they go for off, first, JV?
Gouge your like, face and these, genitals.
Yeah, face. There you go. Face
these
and genitals.
And like that wasn't even a huge chimpanzee, right? It was like a no, smallish no. chimpanzee.
You remember, it's like if you go to comedians in cars getting coffee with Jerry Seinfeld, and Eddie Murphy's talking about when he was hanging out with Michael Jackson and he saw Bubbles the chip, but he had already grown and he was like in the cage and he goes, don't go near there. He goes, don't go near there, Eddie. It's Dayton. It was going crazy. I mean, you know, I think JVL, I think about the time that you told me when you met that the chimp on Dennis
the chimp
Miller's
on the
show.
Dennis Miller show. Yeah.
Even your telling me about it made me very uncomfortable because of the potential.
So clearly these people are delusional, thinking that they could take a chimp, but perhaps not as delusional as the 15% of Americans who say that they could defeat a king cobra.
Sonny.
I don't think I would defeat a king cobra, but I could. I think you'd have a better shot against a king cobra than
chimp.
You would a chimp.
100%.
Oh, I would 100%
if you
sooner
can get around,
try a king cobra than a chimp.
If you can get around the king cobra from behind and start swinging it.
I mean, here's the thing. Here's like of all the animals left on this list, the king cobra is by far the easiest to kill.
False.
In terms of like the actual physical act of killing it, because you could just you stomp on its head, or you grab it and you swing it around.
Fast. They're, like, they're fast, man.
More than it's you think it's harder to kill to again to commit the physical act of like. Applying enough pressure to break a king cobra so it could not harm you anymore. Like, that is way easier than, like, even a kangaroo, which I don't think a kangaroo is nearly as dangerous as a king cobra. But, like, trying to figure out how to kill a kangaroo, you'd have to, like, it would take effort.
Yeah, it would take effort.
Rear naked choke.
Okay.
That's how you beat a kangaroo.
Okay.
So the next one is a kangaroo. We then get to wolf, where 12% of Americans say that they could take a wolf.
We're just skipping right over kangaroo, which is interesting because I think kangaroo is the last one on here that I could probably beat in a fight.
They're good boxers. You know, they box.
They are good boxers. Kangaroos are, again, once again, kangaroos are real assholes. Mm-hmm. People don't appreciate, like, how they like, have a real sense of entitlement because you're not allowed to hunt them, I guess. They're like deers. They're like the deer of Australia. So, like, if you happen upon one, they're just like, oh, oi, mate, this is my Barbie. What are you doing here? And then you have to, like, square up and fight them.
That's how the kangaroo...
That's how they all sound. That's how they talk.
Okay.
They all talk like that.
All right, so let's move quickly through the rest of it, because the rest of it is, I just want to read off the percentage of Americans who think that they could defeat the remaining animals. Wolf, 12% of Americans. Crocodile, 9%, so they could beat a crocodile.
That depends where you're from.
Gorilla, 8%.
8% of Americans think they could beat a gorilla.
Lion,
like a silverback.
8%. Elephant, 8%.
Now that's crazy.
Grizzly bear, 6%.
Mm-hmm. I want to know who the people are who were like, I can't beat a grizzly bear, but I could beat an elephant.
I'll tell you what, it's people who mistakenly misinterpreted the question and thought they had access to like an elephant gun. That's what they had.
Yeah.
And honestly, if the of all of those, mm-hmm. of all of those animals, which do you think you would have the lowest possible chance? I think it would have to be the gorilla.
Gorilla, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. The elephant, I just don't know how you would go about doing that. What would you do?
Well, yeah, I mean, again, it's like...
Unarmed.
You could tire it out, and it would starve to death because it was too slow to get
the
you.
The gorilla thing, Oh, yeah. Going really quickly, I think I told you about the chimp when I was on jury duty and the guy who worked at the National Zoo said that.
Yes.
It just grabbed, as soon as you're supposed to go completely limp. Don't try. Don't even try to resist. They'll just snap your
grip strength.
Yeah, grip strength. Grip strength. One last thought was
people are so delusional.
It, you know, the gorilla thing, by the way, that would be ugly. I mean, you would be smashed to bits. You would be smashed to bits. Rat.
Back to rat.
My barber Habib, he told me that his father killed a rat in Morocco. He said he trapped it in the bathroom, and he killed it with a chair. You know what? I won't forget this because he told me he's cutting his hair. Word for word, he goes, "It screamed like baby." I mean, you know, I mean, that's just an awful thing. So that's why I'm very hesitant about rat. But speaking of rats, this week we're talking about a movie called The Suicide Squad on HBO Max. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
What did you call this movie?
Rats, because there's all these rats.
No. What did you call this movie?
Oh,
it's The Suicide Squad, not Suicide Squad. We got to make sure we get that right.
Well, questions later.
So it's The Suicide Squad. It's from James Gunn, who directed the two Guardians of the Galaxy movies for Marvel. I remember he got fired from Marvel because he did some bad tweets in the early 2010s, and then people found them. People resurfaced them, as they say. So this movie is directed and written by James Gunn. And what you have to understand about this movie and the fact that it was written and directed by James Gunn is that James Gunn got his start with Troma Entertainment, I believe is the name of the studio, Troma Entertainment. And Troma is best known as the studio behind The Toxic Avenger, but a bunch of other stuff. Basically, it's like schlock intended for adults, but is exceptionally juvenile in its sensibility. And these movies all cost, you know, like $1 million or $2 million. They're not.
They're the alternate version of Roger Corman.
Yeah, right. They're exactly. They're like the hardcore Roger Corman. And the fact that James Gunn has been given, I don't know, $150 to $200 million to make what amounts to a superhero Troma Pictures movie is like kind of amazing all on its own. I mean, this is the sort of movie where violence is done for hugely comic effect and repeatedly over and over again. They curse a lot of F-bombs in this, you know, a lot of bad language. And it has the same sort of juvenile sensibility every time that you think somebody has finally overcome their issues, they quickly die or, you know, whatever. The start of the movie essentially does the work of setting up the premise, which is this: if you're a supervillain and Amanda Waller, who is played by Viola Davis, comes to you, she says, "I will give you 10 years off your prison sentence if you do this task for me, this off the books task." And you go out on these missions, and on the first mission, which is includes amongst other actors, Michael Rooker playing a guy who can throw balls. I guess I wasn't 100% sure. It was angles something. Pete Davidson, who's playing a guy. There's a weasel character, and some others. They go on this mission, and they all die. They are the Suicide Squad. They are the diversion for the real team.
Including Captain Boomerang, who is a member of the
including Captain Boomerang from the first movies. Harley Quinn is also on this team, but she survives, as does Colonel Rick Flagg. They were also in the first movie. The real team that we are following is the one that is led by Idris Elba, who plays what's his character's name?
Bloodsport.
Bloodsport and Bloodshot and Deadshot all confused in my head. I can never keep them all straight. Bloodsport and Peacemaker, who's played by John Cena, are the kind of leaders of this team. They're the real team. They're going to Cordo Maltese, the fictional Caribbean island nation, to obtain information of crimes the United States of America has committed, because this is a very political movie. You see, it's very political. In the course of doing it, they unleash Starro the Conqueror, who is a giant psychic starfish from outer space, who takes over people's minds with little baby starfish. And that's the movie. I look, here's
I mean, when you put it like that, son.
The thing about this movie is I feel like it's the sort of thing I should have liked a lot more than I did. And I can't quite put my finger on exactly what I didn't like about it. I felt almost bludgeoned by it. There was too much going on at any given time for me to really, like, breathe and appreciate it. I don't think... I don't think it's quite as funny as it thinks it is, but even... But I say that, and I laughed a lot in the movie. It is very funny. Like, the character played by David... what's his name? David... the Crazy Eyes.
Oh, yeah, from Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Polka Dots. David Dalmatian or whatever. Polka Dot Man.
You mean
he
from
has
The Dark Knight?
From The Dark Knight. Too. He's also in The Dark Knight, yeah. He's very good. He's very funny. He has this kind of, like, tragic backstory that makes the fact that he shoots polka dots to disintegrate people very funny. And he plays the character with this nice melancholy. King Shark is a very funny, dumb, Groot-like character. It's basically, you know, from Guardians of the Galaxy. It's their Groot, voiced by Sylvester Stallone. Again, funny and kind of clever, but, like, it's not funny enough, and it's not nearly as transgressive as it thinks it is. And this is, I think, my big problem with the movie, is that it thinks it is doing something really interesting and, like, kind of, you know, over the top and clever. It's like, oh, we have nudity in this movie. There's a dick in this movie, and there's boobs in another scene. And, like, but it's all in the background, and it's kind of blurry. You don't really, they don't really do anything with it. It's just kind of there to have in the R tagline, you know, graphic nudity. The cursing is, like, there's a lot of fucks, but, like, they don't actually say anything offensive. There's nothing offensive that is said in this movie. The violence is kind of over the top, but it's nothing we haven't seen before. Even the funny bits where they're, like, going through the Latin American rebel camp and killing everybody, and they find out, oops, these were the good guys that we killed in this comic way that's supposed to make us, like, think about it. I was like, I've seen this before. We've seen this sort of thing before. It's like competitive assassins killing people. Not that interesting. I don't know. I was underwhelmed. I was underwhelmed by the whole thing, in addition to feeling, like, bludgeoned by the so much outrageousness of it. Like, the constant imagery and the, you know, hitting you over the head, the joke a minute. It didn't work for me. I don't know why. It just didn't work for me.
Well, you explained. You just explained why. So, JV,
Vic, what did you think? How'd this do on the quadrants?
Technically on the quadrants. The plot is an A. It's pretty straightforward what they got to do. Couple twists here, surprise turns from certain people about who you think are good but turn out to be bad, vice versa. Duration, it gets a D. That was a long movie. I felt it was long. It was over
two hours.
Yeah, it was over 2 hours.
It's actually, it's like 2 hours, 12 minutes, yes. But it's only an hour 58 or
really?
So when the credits start.
Much
it's
longer.
Like, but it does feel long, doesn't
long.
It?
Let's just
feels,
get to
feels
it
like
already.
A long movie.
Violence action's an A+, but, you know, but it is, it's almost desensitizing because, you know what I mean? It loses its effect after, you know, I mean, there was some impressive, you know, head kills, but after a while, it's just, you know, it's a blur. Sex nudity gets a C. You know, I mean, it's not an F. I mean, there's some stuff in there. There's good stuff
in there. There's
nudity. Yeah, that's
what I
mean.
When's the last time you saw a movie with nudity in it, Victorino?
I don't, you know, that's a good question. Oh, probably the one with the French soldier woman.
So you can't tell me that it's been... Yeah. That this is a C or a D or whatever.
Well,
this has to be an A.
Yeah, but no.
There
but
is actual nudity.
But it's not good nudity.
No, it's not good, and it's not a lot of action. It's not Atomic Blonde, you know, which is not nudity, but man, good stuff, you know. So overall, the average is a B. It's a B. But did I like it? No, I didn't like this movie. I'm not, you know, with the exception of the Dark Knight series, I'm not a DC fan, so I don't know who these people are. I don't find it. I have no idea what's going on. You know,
you liked Joker, didn't you?
I like Joker a lot, but it's not even that. Is that really a superhero as much as it is, I don't know, Taxi Driver? I mean, it was just it's a whole other thing. There's not superheroes going on, and I'm so CGI'd out. I'm just done with the CGI. Anyway, I don't
Did
know
Did you
these
not
people.
Like the practical starfish face huggers?
It was interesting, but...
Because that was not CGI. Those were people with starfish stuck onto their faces.
Okay, that's good to know. But, you know, I don't know. I just didn't find it compelling. I didn't care enough about the characters, and I don't know who they are. I don't know what the story is. Was this a reboot of the first movie with Will Smith? Is that what this is?
Man of the People right here, because this is what everybody who did not go see this movie is thinking. Like, is this a sequel? Is it a reboot?
It's a
soft reboot, basically. It's a sequel, technically. It's technically a sequel. But it is essentially designed to erase the first film from history.
I was also surprised that in the beginning when I saw Michael Rooker and Pete Davidson, and I saw them there in the credits and stuff.
Why is Yondo here?
Yeah, and I thought, oh, good. You know, we'll see what happens. And of course, they're gone early. And I thought, you know, was there an edited? Is this an edited version where they had a longer, bigger role in a previous?
Well, no, the
version?
Whole point. The whole point of them being there is to kill them immediately, so you understand what the stakes are, so you can see what the Suicide Squad is. This is one of the things that this movie does so much better than the original. In the original, in the first one directed by David Ayer in 2016, they introduce the concept and the characters three times. Three times they tell us we're sending these supervillains on a suicide mission that the United States government is forming to combat the threat of the metahuman crisis. And then they have literally this same exact conversation three times. Three fucking times in the movie. And it's like the whole first 30 or 40 minutes of the film. So this movie does a much more efficient job of, like, in 10 minutes, it sets up the stakes, the concept, the idea, and everything, which is good. I appreciate that.
I was very surprised, though, when they had early deaths. It was the most surprised since Steven Seagal in Executive Decision. You think, oh, good, he's going to be in the, what? You know, and he's gone. Anyway, but I don't know what's going on here. So, I mean, I don't really feel like a connection to care about what happens to these people. I've never heard of them before. I have no idea with it. You know, I didn't see the movie Harley Quinn. So, I mean, I just don't know what's happening. JVL.
Birds of Prey.
The Fantabulous. Sir.
The Fantabulous Emancipation of
it's
that
it's
idiot.
It's the longest headline
Joker
since Tu Wong Fu. Thanks for everything. Julie Newmar had a great time. P.S.
Harley Quinn doesn't work as a character.
So
in any of these movies?
JVL, Sonny, it's all you. Go.
Sonny, you feel like you should have liked this more than you did. I feel like I liked it a lot more than I should have. I liked it a very great deal, and it was super duper fun. It was very funny, I thought. There's a lot of gags in it which are hysterical, many of which have to do with John Cena, who is a revelation when he is playing everything straight as a simpleton. And he only gets bad when he, like, then turns into a bad guy at the end. But when he is pure simpleton, it's a riot. Walking around in his tighty whities with, like, you know, four softballs stuffed into the crotch, like as if nothing is wrong. And then when they go undercover to the dance club, he's wearing a Lacoste polo shirt that is three sizes too small. And so it's like a belly shirt. That's hysterical. Like, that is such a fantastic sight gag. I don't know how you guys weren't laughing at it. It was just a riot.
I thought he was not good in this. I have to strongly.
Oh, I thought he was great up until the very end when they asked him to start acting.
Yeah.
That was a problem.
I liked him.
The opening is a riff on the Deadpool sequel. Remember the Deadpool sequel when he, you know, leads his handpicked team, and they all die within 5 seconds, but in funny ways. That's kind of what happens with, like, it's hysterical. I liked basically everything about it. You know, it's funny. So you said it was very political. J-Pod told me, he's like, you'll love this. It's super anti-American and you're a commie. And I can't believe
J-Pod saw it.
I think that is people reading too much into it. I mean, you know, the American government in the person of Amanda Waller is bad, but the people who work in Amanda Waller's unit are not bad.
They do the right thing.
It's all about the commie government.
It's all about the American government kidnapping a starfish space alien and taking him to an island nation that is like clearly designed to be kind of a colony type situation for us, and then us performing human experiments on people.
Children.
Look, they leave it
Colonel
to
Rick Flagg is disillusioned that
they
his
it
service
to the crazy generalissimos who are all corrupt and bad people. And I found the entire like Banana Republic depiction of the island to be hysterical. The whole thing was a riot, honestly. And I just laughed over and over. But when they said Project Starfish, I thought to myself, because I went into this totally cold with no, you know, I didn't read any of your reviews or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, oh, come on, they're not going to do Starro. They're not going to do Starro. Because Starro is when, so in the early 60s, DC did a bunch of the dumbest supervillains you've ever seen. And it was like Starro the Conqueror, whose first appearance, I believe, I did not look this up, is The Brave and the Bold, number 28, which I think is the first appearance of the Justice League. And then you have like Amazo. Do you guys remember Amazo?
Again, I'm not
and
a
Amazo
DC person.
Is this, Amazo is a single guy who has all the powers of the entire Justice League. And so he's fast like the Flash. But you to look at him, it's like they took a Mad Libs version of all the Justice League and put the stupidest villains in the world. And I just thought to myself, James Gunn's not going to do that. He's not going to do Starro, because doing Starro is itself a transgressive thing to do in a movie.
See, but here's the thing. I think it's faux transgressive. It's faux transgressive, though. It's like, what's the most ridiculous thing I could do? Let's do that. And I don't think that's actually transgressive. I think it's just kind of silly.
I don't know. I thought it worked. And it was good. You know what the other thing is, though? Visually, the movie has so much style and so much flair that it is never boring to look at. He even does scene transitions, right? Where, you know, he's setting up act one, act two, going to get Harley, you know, or stopping going to do this other thing first. There's one scene transition where he comes over over a line of buildings in the Corto Maltese city, and there are a bunch of antennas and chimneys that, you know, spell out whatever the word is. But it's all done as an optical illusion. It's just so much care
that.
Is taken
I
on all
that
stuff.
Sonny, do you think it's what? It's too gimmicky, or it tries too
hard?
I thought it
felt kind of try hard, but also just like, I don't, why, it's not necessary. It's just not necessary. You don't need to tell us. It doesn't respect the viewer is the problem. It like does not respect us enough to like just do the thing. Instead, it's like walking us through this. Okay, here's what we're doing next. Here's where we're going next. And part of me
thinks
that
it had a lot of visual flair and style, and it was interesting to look at. Just not something I have seen a lot of in Black Widow, right? Or a bunch of these other movies we watched recently, which have had nothing to look at on screen.
It has a personality to it, and I will give it that. I like it has an actual kind of visual sensibility and style, and the characters reflect they feel like they were written by a real person.
Yeah.
Instead of a, you know, committee.
But I mean, can I give you my big the real reason I liked it is less because of less because of the movie itself, and more because of what the movie itself is. And it's about continuity, right? So in comic books, continuity is this really cool thing, and it's cool for about a decade. And then after a decade, it becomes absolutely stultifying. And you can see this in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where it's continuity. It has gone on long enough. It has enough properties that continuity is starting to cause problems. And I don't mean like logic problems, but I mean story and character problems. I'll give you two examples. One, Captain Marvel just utterly guts the character of Nick Fury, right? Nick Fury has been this badass who, when Thor shows up, realizes he's got to stand up something new because there are aliens, etc. And Captain Marvel's like, yeah, no, that's not true. He knew there were aliens like 20 years before Thor, and you know, he's sort of a figure of fun. He lost his eye to a space cat. And it just undercuts the character of Nick Fury. Black Widow does the same thing with Natasha Romanoff, right? I mean, the Natasha Romanoff character we get throughout the MCU is that she is trying to hold the Avengers together throughout Civil War, and then she sacrifices herself to save her family, because the Avengers are her real family in Infinity War. And the idea is that she, the Avengers, the only family she's ever had. And that's why this assassin like grows to love and cherish them in ways that she's never really willing to say out loud. In the movie Black Widow is just like, never mind, Natasha has an actual real family. Here they are. And that just guts the whole, everything we know about the character. And what DC has decided to do, funnily enough, is there just is no continuity. And that makes it a lot more hit and miss. But on the other hand, it's really liberating creatively. And so just within the DC universe, we have the Dark Knight trilogy. We have the Snyderverse. We have the Joker movie. We have the first Suicide Squad. We have this Suicide Squad. We have Birds of Prey. This is like five different distinctive continuities in which sometimes you have different actors playing the characters, like of Joker and Batman. And even when you talk about Margot Robbie, she's playing, honestly, three different versions of Harley Quinn. It's the same actress, but she's not playing the character the same way. And this is much more like what you get in comic books, where you get a new writer who is writing Batman for a year, you know, and his Batman is going to be different from the guy who writes the next Batman.
Is this Harley Quinn, by the way, is this movie take place after, like chronologically, than her movie?
No, it's totally out of time.
Out of time.
Okay. And honestly, it's a different character. Mm. Like in this one, she's doing self-help stuff and trying to, you know, like it's just a totally different character. And she, I think Margot Robbie, to her very great credit, plays them as different characters.
This is, it's an interesting theory. It is just factually incorrect. I mean, like the Suicide Squad is a sequel to Suicide Squad, which takes place firmly within the Snyderverse. Birds of Prey, again, is a sequel to Suicide Squad. It's pretty separate, frankly. You could consider that separate. But Shazam has references to all the Batman vs. Superman stuff. Aquaman has references to like Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah, that's Snyderverse. That is the Man of Steel, but that is distinct from Dark Knight, which is distinct from Joker, which is distinct from Birds of Prey.
Dark Knight, and yeah. No, Birds of Prey is part of all of these movies. It is in the same universe. It's in the same universe. It just is.
In the most technical way possible. I mean, again, yeah. When you compare, you see, Birds of Prey is in the same universe as the Snyder Cut Justice League is maybe, I guess, true, except that Trey Pushin watching them, you would never in the world think that they were part of the same universe.
No, that's probably true. That's Birds of Prey is also the worst of these movies outside of like Suicide Squad.
I just disagree. I like Birds of Prey a lot. But the point is, even when the individual things fail, like the first Suicide Squad does, being liberated from the confines of continuity, it prevents you from getting the Infinity War, right? You can't do an Infinity War unless you have continuity. You have to be able to build up to it. But on the other hand, it frees you up to do stuff like Joker. And I think that that's kind of, in a weird way, admirable. It's certainly interesting, and it goes against the whole cinematic universe thing that everybody else has been going for over the last decade. And it frees up the possibility of getting, like, a movie version of Red Sun, right? Or Gotham Central, stuff like that, you know, things which are in this Logan, right? And so Logan is out of continuity, right? And out of continuity movies, I think, are necessary and important. And I don't know how Marvel is going to get out of it. I feel like they've backed themselves into a corner where not only do all the movies have to be in continuity, but now all the streaming series on DC Disney Plus have to be in continuity. And I just, they're going to wind up strangled and suffocating under the weight of this.
Well, I mean, I think what they're trying to do with the movies is create essentially a whole new separate universe. I mean, right, you have the Eternals, you have Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, and I think they're going to try to do a whole new thing. I don't know that it's going to work because they're still going to be doing Guardians of the Galaxy movies. They're still doing, they've got their new Thor movie that they're working. I don't know.
Or is their way out prequels, you know?
Well, and the great irony of this, of course, is that DC was the publisher who was hidebound by continuity. So DC constructed this insane, elaborate rationale for why everything was in continuity and what it was called the multiverse. And there were an infinite number of universes with an infinite number of Earths. And DC had a whole Earth 1, Earth 2, Earth 3, Earth X, Earth Prime. And you were supposed to know which Earth the Flash, you know, if I showed you a picture of this version of the Flash or this version of Green Lantern, you were supposed to know, oh, that's the Earth 3 Green Lantern, right? Or that's the Earth where the supervillains run everything. And it was absolutely cockamamie and ridiculous. And meanwhile, Marvel was the publishing house, which in the early 2000s, I forget exactly when, they just decided, you know, we're really stultified by all this continuity. What if we just started everything over again? They're like, yeah, that'd be cool. Let's do the Ultimates. And so they just started a line of comic books where they just threw the word Ultimate on the back, like Ultimate Spider-Man, right. Ultimate Fantastic Four. And the idea behind the Ultimate line was, we're just going to pretend it's a totally blank slate, and this is the first time anybody has ever said the word X-Men, and you could do whatever you want, and it doesn't matter. Yeah. And they did this for 15 years, and then they just blew it all up and went back to this, which is really brave and really interesting and is the kind of boldness which I think Marvel will have to do if it's going to stay as the Marvel that we know. Because I look at the future of Marvel, the near-term future, like Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings and Lady Thor and all this stuff, and I just think to myself, it's going to be a long time before you're doing Infinity War again.
Yeah.
You know, like this is, you are dealing with actors and characters that people are not going to care about.
Yeah.
Thank you, JVL.
But people always thought that was going to happen with like Thor and Captain America and Iron Man. They're like, oh, who are these third tier heroes? They're not going to be able to make that work. And they did.
Yes, but they had like really good, I mean, they weren't third tier heroes. And they were absolute stud actors and movie stars. And I don't want to pick on Brie Larson, but the idea that you're going to put Brie Larson at the center of a cinematic universe and ask people to pay for it, I just don't understand. Mm-hmm. Like she's not a movie star, and this is not a knock on her. She may be a wonderful actress. She may be a great human being, and all that stuff, but. You know, I don't know, like, take Mackenzie Davis and give her that part or something like that. Like, having Chadwick Boseman die is a real problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, Black Panther was this incredibly great character. Chadwick Boseman was an absolute movie star. He's the type of guy you could have built
Black Panther lived at the end, right? I get confused.
Yeah.
You know, and like, geez, that is a gut punch for them. You're going to build this around, Elizabeth. Shuri and Elizabeth Olsen, the Scarlet Witch. I love the Scarlet Witch. I love Elizabeth Olsen. I think they're great, but that is not Robert Downey Jr. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. You got a lot of problem with women, JBL. That's what I'm hearing.
No, you're hearing that like sexism. Mackenzie Davis, who you guys will remember from the last Terminator movie.
Terminator Dark Fate.
Oh, yes.
And Blade Runner 2049.
Mackenzie Davis is an absolute movie star, and that she was not cast to play Captain Marvel, I don't even understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Could have been better. I have a lot of high hopes for Shang-Chi, just because it's time for my people to rise.
Isn't that, aren't Filipino. They Chinese?
Yeah, that's my grandfather's Chinese. I'm a quarter. I'll take that.
I thought you guys were, I guess it's Japanese, you guys.
Oh.
It was Japanese.
No, I think Shang-Chi is Chinese, right? I don't know.
Shang-Chi is definitely
And I'm such
Chinese.
A big fan of the actor, Henry Golding. Okay, moving right along. Spirit of the week. JVL, I look like you were drinking kombucha.
No.
What is that?
I have been drinking a Hardywood product.
Oh.
It is their peach triple, the Belgian triple,
that has been
aged in white wine casks, and it is delicious.
Look at you.
Is that a cider?
It's a fancy beer.
It's a cider. No. It's beer.
It's beer.
It's not. Oh. It is not a cider. And it is the same beer, the same fruit. Belgian triple beer that they sell in a can, right? But it has been taken and aged in oak casks that had been previously used for white wine. And funnily enough, I got this at Costco.
Ah, sure.
Costco is making a real effort to sell more local beer.
Yeah.
And good for
they
them.
Do that. Shout out, Sonny.
We had a listener ask us if we could wish his wife happy birthday. Hold on, let me just pull. I want to pull up the actual message here from Daniel, who asked us if we could. His wife's birthday is on August 18th. Oh, happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
But he did not. He did not give her name in the message. So I had to look it up. But I did find it. Christy. Christina,
you found it yourself?
Leninger.
Wow.
I found it myself. Christy, happy birthday. Your husband is very nice. He signed up for a membership just so he
thank you.
He signed up for a membership just so he could get us this message.
Happy birthday, Christy.
Wish
even
you a
though
happy
he forgot to mention your name.
Even he did not have your name in it. But we figured it. I figured it out.
Sonny's
I figured
good
it out.
Like that.
So I'm Christy, happy birthday. Thank you for listening and being a longtime listener of the Sub Beacon.
All right.
Podcast.
Great. And that is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sunday Bunch at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time. What do you got? What do you got? Nothing?
We're at the beach. We're prepping to do a birthday for G Money tomorrow. And
birthday.
Just there's a lot of boy stuff going on right now.
Okay.
Boy stuff.
All right.
A lot of boy stuff. A lot of boy stuff. We'll just leave it at that. People can let their imaginations run wild, but G-Money has been in rare form. The type of thing that I think in a Me Too environment would probably not play very well for him when he's older.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
that's
boy.
You know, I hope he can grow out of this because...
Yeah, be better. You know, can't act like that.
Running around exposing yourself and laughing about it is, you know, maybe a way to rise to prominence at Miramax, but is frowned upon these days.
No, you know what? That sort of thing, and I know what you're getting at, it's funny. You do get laughs for that. They know. They're getting a rise. You know what? It works for me. It still works for me.
Works for Vic in the office just the other day. Someone was like, I'm sure that's fine. Ooh.